Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, 2 minutes past the hour on the first day of October 2013. Welcome to Kenyan Muslim Socialism. That's right. The right wing have told us all along that if Obamacare went into effect, freedom would end, and we'd all be walking around singing the Internationale and well, America. Not so much. How about that? The right wing lied again. Because they're liars. It's what they do, lying. The right, lying right wing. We could have imagined. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. We begin a brand new month of conversation radio on this day. Thanks to Dr. Bill for another brilliant 2 hours going forward just prior to the beginning of this program. Stirring, interesting conversation going on. And I think I've got a little bit of a response here, and the only response is to say, and I mentioned this in a private message a little bit ago. Okay, all day long the for-profit media have been trotting out their tried, trusty, and tired as hell false dichotomy, false equivalency of both sides do it. Tell me the last time that the Democratic Party shut down the government. I'll take never for 5,000, Alex. Yeah. And we all, there's a lot of folks in America having their sort of Rodney King moment, asking, you know, can't we all just get along? No one wants to get along more than I do. But here's the deal: if we want to get along, here's what we have to sign on for. I and every other uninsured American have to agree that we are willing to lay down our lives as the result of lack of access to essential health care. Not disease, just lack of access to health care. We have to agree to lay down our lives, sacrifice ourselves, go die quickly. And if we do that, the perfectly reasonable Republicans will then give us back our government with a couple of digits chopped off, a little beaten up, maybe a few bruises, a little leakage here, a little bleeding there, but they'll give us back our country. If us uninsured poors, if us uninsured moochers, if us useless eaters will just effing die. That's the deal we've been offered. And so get out the tambourine, somebody get out a nylon string guitar, strum up a few chords, let's all sing Kumbaya with the godforsaken teabaggers, and let's get us uninsured people a nice warm bath, and we'll just get it over with so the Republicans will give our country back. That's the deal. That's how we can reach bipartisanship. Oh, ain't it charming? No, I have not registered for any kind of health care yet. It seemed rather superfluous today to expect a government-run computer system to work on the day that the Republican Party had shut down government. The for-profit media are so stupid. Oh, over at MSNBC, over at Chicken Noodle News. Well, we have I spent 40 minutes on the phone trying to register for Obamacare, and I couldn't. I don't think the South... Obviously, there are glitches! Two words. Government shut down. What do you think? Keebler elves are running the healthcare.gov servers right now? More on that in a minute, Keebler elves. So, no, I'm not signed up yet, but I will be. And apparently, on this first day of the government shutdown, traffic to those very same servers was freaking huge. Who knew that so many people in this country would be lining up to go and give away their freedom in return for Kenyan Muslim socialism? Yeah. By the way, a gentle reminder, this is the first day of October. It begins a new fundraising month here on the Horn. And in point of fact, we try to raise $150 every day, every show, every program. And this date is no different. I received word today that Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table for this, the first day of October. $150 on the table that'll take care of fundraising for today if it is matched with another $150. There we go. So hopefully that will play out. And everybody will respond accordingly. That's interesting, Marty. Marty says, I read a story earlier today that Repiglick and Shills were the ones overloading the servers. Wouldn't be at all surprising. So, you know, we can certainly sit down and negotiate with the terrorists, but it is going to come at a terrible cost to you and me. Assuming the you part of you and me are uninsured. Because, see, we have to die. That's what they want. Die quickly. And as Marty notes, leave all the money on their table. Thank you. Goodbye now. Right. But there are other things to talk about in connection with the government shutdown. I personally do not expect this thing to end until we reach the next financial crisis debate, at which point these marauding hordes will be in full burn baby burn mode. Because sometimes, you know, that's the problem with marauding hordes. They're not particularly intellectual, and sometimes they just like to burn things to watch it burn. It is said that one of the great regrets of Alexander the Great came when, as he was looting the Persian Empire, he allowed their great city to be burned. He and his Macedonians had gotten righteously liquored up and decided it would be really fun to watch a beautiful city go up in flames. So they did. He grieved about it ever after. Jeremy with a note. Here in Vermont, first thing this morning, saw a post from our local right-wing CBS station posted on social media. Is anybody else having trouble with the new healthcare interchange today? Government shutdown. Jeremy notes, government shutdown, you effing fools. Yeah. Atne ute aitbre, a they. Aren't they? No. Dr. John asking, don't they realize that means a lot of people were trying to get enrolled? Morans! The morans ye have always with ye. So we have that to talk about. But then there's the larger issue, and I was tweeting about this a little bit last night. There are people who, despite the government shutdown, are expected to come to work. And they're not going to be paid. And that raises the larger overarching issue of the right of labor And by labor, I don't mean some big labor organization whose president makes $400,000 a year and has an Olympic-sized swimming pool in his backyard and is transported by limousine to the office every day. That ain't the labor I'm talking about. I'm talking about people who work for a living. The numbers that I read, and they could be entirely wrong, but this is how I'm going to proceed with the discussion, were that 1 million people are going to be asked to work without being paid. They are called essentials. Even if the government shuts down, they have to show up. And a simple hypothetical popped into my head, and that is this. If the Repiglicans have gone all the way now to wanting people to labor for free for them, then A, can we finally say that they have given up the mantle of Lincoln? That's A. B, that they support involuntary servitude. But C, how hard would it be to get people who work for the government, who are working and not being paid, to realize their own worth, to calculate for a moment their own value? Because, you see, in civilized countries, I have no doubt what would happen under these circumstances. The Italians, the French, the Germans, the Swedes, the Norwegians, the Spaniards, the Portuguese would say, F it, we're not going to work. This ain't like Reagan with PATCO. You can't fire 1 million people. 1 million people have more power than a handful of drop-dead, ignorant, half-drunk Republicans. Irish Dave says, I love the smell of burning capitalism in the morning. I see the Carnival cruise ship, that's C-R-U-Z, is steaming in circles with the toilets backed up. The bar is still open, though, according to Peter King and Weepy John of Orange, who thought the old saying was, the only good Republican is a dead drunk Republican. Seems like Alan Grayson disagrees. Good for Alan Grayson. So, there you go. We have people who are being called into work with no promise, who are not being paid for their work. Oh, I'll give you an IOU. And I had folks respond to me on Facebook saying, listen, I signed a no-strike clause. I can't strike. I'm not allowed to strike. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. On that day when a human being can no longer withhold his or her labor, that, not Obamacare, is the measure of freedom. I have forebears, not that distant in time, who also were told they could not strike. They were told their families would be thrown out in the street. They were told that they would be blacklisted. And they were told that they would never work anywhere around here again, which was essentially a death sentence. You know what they did? They struck. And they said no. They said no. This could be a pivotal moment in American history. It will not be, but it could be. 1 million people refusing to work for free would drive those two-legged cockroaches of the Tea Party into a screaming frenzy. And they would go to the courts. And the courts would say, you're in violation of, and the working people would say, yes, though, it's worth it. It's worth it. Every so often I see these emails come through saying, October 12th, general strike. We had the story last week of the teabaggers, the teabagging truckers, who are going to drive their big rigs to Washington, D.C. to stop the corruption of the Constitution. But on something like this that really matters, a chance to well and truly take the government back. See, that's the problem. We tend to see ourselves as individuals and not as groups or collectives or part of a part of something larger. I can't strike. I have a mortgage. I can't strike. I have a car payment. I can't strike. The power will be cut off. I can't strike. I'll lose my job. But they could not do that to a million people. It is simply administratively impossible. There are not a million people ready to do those jobs in a moment's notice. This is a moment where the planes have to stop flying. This is a moment where the trains have to stop running. This is a moment where if everything is ground to a halt, the Republican Party might understand that the American people really are tired of the bullshit. Or they might continue to press the issue. As it stands, they're going to continue to press the issue. Is your mortgage lender going to say, well, we understand. The Republicans shut the government down, and you're not getting paid, so you're behind on your mortgage payment. We understand. It'd take as long as you need. When has a mortgage lender ever done that? So we may have people who go into individual financial collapse, even though they continue to show up at work. Literally sacrificing themselves for a gang of pig-eyed, drop-dead, dead-drunk, mean-ass conservatives. So by all means, yeah, let's sit down and negotiate with these pricks. Let's have a conversation with somebody who says, here we go. Yeah. Let's sit down and have a conversation with Representative David Schweikert of Arizona. Sure. And in fact, we'll let him start the conversation.
Let's talk with Representative David Schweikert. He's in the studio with us. He's an Arizona Republican lawmaker, a member of the House majority that has insisted they will not approve a short-term government funding measure unless it also takes a bite from Obamacare.
And he's brought his coffee along. Congressman, thanks very much. Yeah. I know it was a long night of legislating.
Yeah, and committing the sin of getting near a microphone without a lot of caffeine.
Okay.
Our
sleep. Right. Okay, with that stipulated. Now, before we talk about who's to blame for the shutdown, let's just talk about practical results, because I know you wanted to avoid a shutdown, mm-hmm. and you wanted to stop Obamacare. You've ended up with a shutdown, and Obamacare is in effect. Were the tactics the right tactics?
You know, I actually believe they were, but it's been fascinating because in some ways we had to go through, I don't want to refer to it as dance, but this process mm-hmm. for a lot of the American people to actually start to tune in and understand what we were talking about, where the concerns were, and where we thought actually the way the healthcare law is written is damaging the economy and creating sort of the part-timing of America.
Had there not been enough attention to this over the last 3 years?
No, actually, that's what was fascinating. We saw it in polling and even on your show a couple weeks ago, talking about how many folks thought Obamacare was already in full effect, or how many did not understand their own individual obligations.
Or who thought it was a government-run health care program, which it is not.
Oh, yeah, and it's much more complicated, and the number of moving pieces. So if you look, I believe the House actually went back and forth and back and forth and was the one that kept offering alternatives, kept compromising.
But in the end, the law goes into effect and the government is shut down. What do you do now?
I'm hoping, actually, last night's final offer, which was, let's have a conference committee, let's actually do what the process is supposed to do, where the House sends in their adults and the Senate finds some adults, and they get together and quickly sort of dice up saying, look, here's what we're willing to do, here's what you're willing to do.
Because the adults are in the House.
Some would say, on the Democratic side and some of your Republican colleagues, that process is all well and good to have a debate about Obamacare, but this is not the place for it, this funding battle. And I wanted to ask you about something that President Obama told Steve in an interview. He said that there might be a Republican president at some point. And if a Democratic Speaker of the House said, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling unless you pass background checks on guns, that would be a situation that Republicans might empathize with. Isn't there an argument that parties aside, politics aside, a debate over funding is not the place for this?
Well, and absolutely disagree. And look, we both empathize. We both understand the juxtaposition of policy. But this is the process. And if you look back over history, this is nothing new.
Yes, I know.
We act very shrill and the world's coming to an end, but this isn't new. And the process actually is designed where you expect the Senate to throw back an offer and you expect the House to do its dance. And
over funding. I mean, over government funding.
But over temporary funding. But it's over everything. And funding, got to understand, the previous shutdowns, what is it, 17 of them in the last, at least during my lifetime, have all been in some subject about funding.
I wonder if you've spoken to John McCain, your Republican colleague. He's in the Senate from Arizona. He has suggested he didn't like Obamacare, not a fan, but he said this. We're not going to defund Obamacare. That battle is over. But let's move on.
But there's actually sort of one of my sadnesses in the misuse of language. If you look at our last sort of offer from the House, it was okay. We're no more defunding, no more delaying. We would like to delay the individual mandate. Just as big business has been given, just as 1,200 other organizations have been handed from the administration, if you're going to treat all those one way with a delay, why wouldn't you do that for individuals?
The president has argued that's the heart of the whole thing. It would ruin the insurance industry to delay that.
Well,
that's what they've argued, just move that back.
Yeah, but I don't know how you make that.
It would ruin the whole bill, but never mind. Law. I'm sorry. It's a law. See? They've done it to me, too. I'm sorry, Jeremy. Jeremy said, good God, Bob, just stop, or I'm going to find a plate glass window to jump through so I can chew the shattered glass after. I know. But we haven't gotten to the good part.
At argument, and then survived the fairness test of, oh, by the way, 1,200 groups that in some ways or another substantially were supporters of this administration or big business get the special treatment. And then we also threw in saying, look, the law makes it very clear Congress and their staff need to operate without the subsidy. That's the way the law is written. And I'm just surprised that there wasn't more movement on just the fairness issue coming back from the Senate.
Fairness.
Really quick questions. Robert.
So let's see. The Congress debated in the House and passed the Affordable Care Act. The Senate debated and passed the Affordable Care Act. The President signed the Affordable Care Act into law. The Supreme Court took a long look at the Affordable Care Act and declared that it was, in fact, constitutional. Where's the lack of fairness? We weren't in the Congress then, and we really hate it. And okay, Jack, time out. There is nothing about a continuing resolution. A, because most of the Affordable Care Act is funded outside that structure. There's nothing in the continuing resolution that requires anything about the Affordable Care Act. Certainly, if we gave up on defunding it. We want to delay implementing the mandate for a year. That has absolutely nothing. There is nothing germane to the question of whether or not to pass a continuing resolution so the government can continue to be the government in there. Nothing. Not a damn thing. You couldn't find it with a microscope. But we haven't gotten to the fun part yet.
Robert Costa of National Review was here yesterday, sitting there where you're sitting now, a really good reporter on Capitol Hill. He described a divide among House Republicans, said a silent majority of House Republicans think that this course is unwise. How would you describe the divide?
Well, I think there's always a sense that it's very uncomfortable when now you're up against the government slowdown. None of us are.
Oh, notice the rebranding. Now it's not a shutdown, it's a slowdown. And this creep says he came to the interview without enough caffeine. My God, he probably had an orgy of focus group testers in his office overnight. Hey, what do you think? How about if we make the our little stenographers in the for-profit media start calling it a government slowdown? What do you guys think? Ooh, that's nice.
We're happy on this, and I don't care where you are ideologically. And I'm hoping that the House's proposal last night of let's get to a conference committee and let's start grinding out where we actually may have some commonality and some current concerns, because this is not a monolith. When I have unions contacting me as a Western state congressman,
sure,
saying,
you do.
Please, we need a delay. We're very concerned. And it's more than the health care components. It's also what it's doing to...
When was this law passed? No, really. When was this law passed? To the best of my recollection, 13 minus 9 is 4. They've had 4 years to sort this out, but instead they ran around howling and screaming about Kenyan Muslim socialism. I certainly hope the unions that he that this guy references will tell. No, we didn't call him. Wasn't us. You guys? Nope, not us. How about you over there? He's got unions calling, saying, "We need another year. We need another year." This is a sixth grader who waited until the last night to make his salt map of the United States and realized he didn't have any salt and needs another week. Where's all that God-blessed personal responsibility these miserable Republicans are forever prating on about? Well, we just need another year. Listen, if you're too stupid to get this figured out in 4 years, another year's not going to help you. I mean, could I... Ms. Othmar? I need to take my algebra test tomorrow. I didn't study for the last 2 weeks, and I just need to... We just need to delay the test for another day. No, really, no, it will be great if we can just delay it for a day.
Houses and family members' coverage, and also the 40-hour work week.
Just maybe about 10 or 15 seconds. Is there a big division in your party right now, and does that concern you?
I'm going to tell you, I see a division even on the left side. Even look at some of the last night's votes, where we had Republicans voting no and Democrats voting yes. It's more complicated, and we keep trying to overly simplify it.
We'll have to stop there. Arizona Republican Congressman David Schweiker, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
This is my idea of fun.
It's more.
This is my idea of fun. We got 800,000 Americans who work for the federal government, and they're out of work. And I'm a multi-freaking millionaire. No, really, I am. And this is my idea of fun. Irish Dave with a note. Now, just a gall darn minute. Isn't the Sacred Amendment really just a bill included in the Bill of Rights? Well, see. Different kind of bill. Jack in Shreveport with a question. Strikes / unions. Bob, what the heck? What is it that people don't get? That the information spewed at them says unions are bad, yet organizations such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the tens of thousands of lobbyists we have since Reagan's election, and others are okay. They're both organizations of people. How freaking hard is that to understand? Too hard. Obviously, too hard. Steve writing in, wait a minute, Bob. I thought all of us unemployed people were just lying around collecting our unemployment check windfall whilst lying around in our hammocks. Yeah, that's what that squeaking's all about. Just swinging in the hammock. But that's okay, because this is all just freaking hilarious to Steve Schweiker. Was that his name? Was that the Scoober's name? Multimillionaire from Arizona. It is nice to have somebody push back. Enter Alan Grayson. He was asked by Salon about these reports, and I mentioned it on the air the other night, that there were some liquored up Congress critters the other night voting for, you know, the government shutdown, essentially, you know, Republicans. And Alan Grayson just said, you know, it's a fact we all have to live with. It's making them violent and abusive toward America. We are in an abusive relationship with the Republican Party and the teabaggers. In the Salon article, Alan Grayson, though, went a little bit further. He explained, you know, what's really at work at the core of what is left of the hollowed-out, Swiss-cheesed, alcohol-burnt-up brains of the teabaggers and the Republican Party. He said, when you talk to them privately, what you find out is that if they could repeal Medicare, they would. If they could repeal Medicaid, they would. They are literally offended by the idea that people would get the care they need to stay healthy or alive, even though they can't afford it. They regard it as some kind of crime against nature. And apparently more than just Ginger Gibson tweeted about the booze on Capitol Hill the other night. Jennifer Bendery said, about every other House lawmaker I just talked to smelled like booze. It's only 9 p.m. And there were all kinds of media types who were smelling the hooch. Oh, our buddy the Angry Indian of the question says, hey, Bob, could you find the time to please explain to the Good Horn Family Commune the basic concept of the general strike? The basic concept of the general strike is nobody works. And you hold out one day longer than the company. If the truck drivers strike, the steel workers strike. If the steel workers strike, the nurses strike. If the nurses strike, the air traffic controllers strike. If the air traffic controllers strike, the bus drivers strike. If the bus drivers strike, the pilots strike. If the pilots strike, the railway conductors strike. And the factory workers, and on and on and on. And everything shuts down, and then we have a nice, sane little conversation about what is wrong with this country, who's responsible, and who's going to have to solve the problem. So there's that. I had an email earlier in the day. I got an internet. Dr. John wrote, government shutdown and the triumph of right-wing memes. And all day long, it's been nothing but a triumph of right-wing memes. Poor little Ashley Banfield put on her serious journalist glasses today and tried to make, like, both sides do it. And asked Paul Begala, of all people, well, I mean, if the Democrats were in the same position, wouldn't they do it too? No, Ashley, no. But, of course, the for-profit media have, at this point in time, very little capability beyond trying to see things in a binary, dualistic world in which every cause has an equal and opposite, every action has an equal and opposite reaction, you get the idea. And it's the only thing they know. It was all over today. I heard it on MSNBC. I heard it on CNN. Jesus, God, Think Progress did a good compendium of newspaper headlines that were just vomit-inducing of the way the for-profit media were handling things. I mean, there were like 10... There's six. Here they are. Six headlines about the government shutdown that will destroy your faith in journalism. You'd have to have some for it to be destroyed. So I felt okay going in. The Washington Post published, "In shutdown blame game, Democrats and Republicans united. It's the other side's fault." The problem being, and see, I'm not really a partisan because I'm not that much in love with the Democratic Party. But damn, I mean, you just sort of have to call them like you see them once in a while. It is the other side's fault if the other side is the Repiglicans, because they're the ones who injected the Affordable Care Act and my ability to be able to go to the doctor when I'm sick, or maybe some wellness visits so as not to get sick. They're the ones who injected that into this process when this process was not even remotely about that. In shutdown blame game, Democrats and Republicans... oh dear, Jeff Bezos, you've got a long road to hoe if you're going to correct that kind of bullshit. Time Magazine, shutdown, Obama and Republicans trade blame as deadline is crossed. Yeah, that's all they're doing. Just trade. That day you're just trading blames because they've got two equally compelling, absolutely comparatively correct positions. The people who want to simply continue funding the government, well, their position is no more or less viable than the position of the people who want other Americans to go die to satisfy their weird ideological fetishes. Over at Radio Rwanda, there was House Republicans in last-ditch effort to avert shutdown. Reid says GOP playing games. And then not content with merely that, Radio Rwanda follows up with, "Partial shutdown begins. Can Congress, White House, compromise?" Where's the compromise? Really, that's what I want to know. That's what started out this program. Where's the compromise? What do you and I have left to give up to these freaks, to these vandals, to these terrorists, to these hostage takers? What do we have left to give up to them? And no, Jim noted by email that he got furloughed in 1995 when he was still a federal government worker and that he was eventually paid, and that's good. But that's 1995, and this is 2013, and this is a 2013 in which the shutdown is coming after the austerity cuts of the sequester have kicked in. So all bets are off. There's no guarantee anybody's getting paid anything. M Live out of Michigan published the following: reactions to government shutdown. Is it wanton destruction by Republicans or a lack of compromise from Democrats? See, that's the problem. We just won't come over to their way of thinking. Damn it. If us no good moochers would just die and get out of the way, imagine how great this country could be again. And then, USA Today via Big Truck. House Senate parry on Obamacare as shutdown imminent. Yes, that's what it is. It was just a couple of goddamn wealthy dilettantes toying with the tip ends foils. Just parrying. No thrusting, really. Just parrying. Oh, hell. Lucky for me, I had no faith in journalism to lose. Yay! Dr. John says, "The best proof that blame isn't equal to me, the proof is that altogether now, the ACA cannot be defunded by a normal spending bill. The premise of the GOP's position is an impossibility. End of story. Unless I'm missing something crucial? No, you're not. You've got it all. It's all right there. Except for the fact that if they could just get... This is all propaganda. This was a shadow play. This was the means wherein we'd catch the conscience of the king. Okay? Because America was going to watch and see that Obama, that Kenyan Muslim, he gave his friends in the unions and his big business buddies, he give them a year to get it all sorted out, but poor old John and Jane Doe American, we're gonna have to become Kenyan Muslim socialists right now. What's happened to my country? See? But like I said, Dr. John shot me a note earlier today observing a couple of things as the shutdown came into effect. He said, here's a microcosm of just how successful the right wing has been at constructing government as the enemy, government workers as parasites, and public services as wasteful. A tweet from the National Park Service main account. Because of the federal government shutdown, this National Park Service Twitter feed is inactive. We'll start tweeting again when we get back. They've since apparently disappeared the comments, so this is from my memory of scrolling through the 100 or so replies that were posted within 10 minutes. Good! Enjoy your taxpayer-funded vacation! Taxpayer-funded? Taxpayer-funded? Taxpayer-funded?
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Me neither, Inigo. If you're furloughed and you're not getting paid, how are you getting a taxpayer-funded vacation? Dr. John continues, that, of course, is true only if federal workers are paid retroactively, which is not guaranteed. Then there's this. This is a free service. Why are you shutting down? We don't pay for Twitter. Why are you shutting down? Dr. John noting, this galls me a lot. I can't tell whether people actually think the Internet is run by magical elves that tweet for fun, or whether they simply think that professional social media isn't a real job. Take it from me. The various national park feeds, Amtrak, and the post office, among other government accounts, are very professional, up-to-date, and full of useful information, as opposed to pictures of cats. I added the pictures of cats part. I mean, I like cats, but... So Dr. John says, and finally this, and I'm paraphrasing again, since you're part of the criminal Obama government, nobody will miss you. Dr. John says, I'm practically certain that the NPS, National Park Service Twitter account, is run by a couple of people in their 20s, likely pretty far down on the GS pay scale, who have no more sway in the so-called criminal Obama government than a rookie drill mechanic has in the Halliburton boardroom. And then Dr. John nails his thesis to the door. We've become a hateful people, Bob. More than that, we've become a short-sighted people. Republicans, teabaggers, Randians, and the like have convinced people that it doesn't matter if your neighbors suffer. So 800,000 Americans are going without a paycheck. Who cares, so long as it's not Joe Teabag? It is funny, though, that the opposite doesn't hold true. It seems to matter a lot if your neighbors succeed, hence the hate directed toward overpaid union thugs and government workers with their high salaries and those teachers who get to paid to work 7 months a year. This malignant combination of selfishness and greed and schadenfreude is, to my mind, the real American exceptionalism. Yeah. You remember a couple of weeks back I played that clip from Lawrence of Arabia, where a very frustrated Peter O'Toole says to Omar Sharif, as a matter of fact, I think I've got it here. Yeah.
So long as the Arabs fight tribe against tribe,
So long will they be a little people, a silly people, greedy, barbarous, and cruel.
That's us now. That's a line from a 1962 movie about events that happened in 1915. But that's us now. That is the United States of America. That is precisely the teabaggers that Dr. John is talking about. We've become a hateful people, Bob. More than that, we've become a short-sighted people. A silly people. Greedy, barbarous, and cruel. That's us! Well, not us. Them. Teabaggers. Republicans, John Birchers, Milton Friedman freaks, Ayn Randians. In other words, the GOP. And again, with her serious glasses on, Ashley Banfield over on Chicken Noodle News today tried to say she asked some Republican consultant, whether it was time for the Republican Party, to distance itself from the Tea Party. And that was a real furniture kicker for me. Because let's understand something right here, right now, and forevermore. The Tea Party is the Republican Party. The only historical comparison would have to be the Republican Party's the 1860 Republican Party's contingent of disaffected Whigs, Lincoln and his types, know-nothings, anti-Masonic Party members, really there was such a thing, and they all came together under an umbrella that they called Republicanism. And that's what the Republican Party was. Well, now the Republican Party consists of teabaggers, John Birchers, Klansmen, Milton Friedman economic terrorists, Ayn Randian anarchists, and right-wing evangelical fundamentalists who don't have enough sense to figure out shoestrings and are therefore very, very handy as cannon fodder in the culture wars. So you go on, y'all that want to. Y'all sit down and have a nice conversation with the stump licker bunch. You'll know they've been into the stump licker because their eyes will be all red and pig-eyed and sort of beady and hateful, and they won't look at you, they'll look past you. And you can sit there and talk about finding common ground with them while they're sitting there dragging their knife blades across a convenient rock. Y'all do that. Have a good time. If anybody survives, send a note back, would you? That's where we are. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, so named for the Titanic intellect of the right wing. And there is no better example of this than something Steve tweeted to me earlier today. The man in question is Rick Joyner. That's Joyner with a Y. J-O-Y-N-E-R. Rick Joyner. He has a TV show somewhere on Morningstar TV. I thought the Old Testament said Lucifer was the... Oh, never mind. And he Morningstar Ministries, yes. And their logo is an eagle silhouetted against a full moon. Rick Joyner understands the nature of the problem. I could have saved this for Wednesday, but no, he's not. Again, this is one of those tax-exempt organizations that's out there talking politics instead of soul-saving. But we're not going to let that get in the way, are we? No, hell no. Our good friends over at Right Wing Watch pulled out this clip. I don't know where they find the stamina. Or the interns. I imagine there's a rather high turnover. Boss, I can't be an intern anymore. I'm bleeding from my ears. I've been listening to Brother Joyner all day long. That's all right, son. We'll find another one just like you. You done good work. Go get you some cotton balls. The Cold Civil War is at a pretty good rolling boil right about now.
I mean, there's no way our republic can last much longer. It may not last through Obama's second term. There are a lot of people that feel that, you know, it can't. There are forces at work right now seeking to undermine and to destroy the republic. There's almost a glib and almost a joyful disregard of the Constitution, a belittling of the Constitution. We can't make it without that. That's our foundation, our moorings.
Our moorings, not the Constitution is. It's our foundation. It's our moorings. There's almost a glib belittling of the Constitution. I would agree with him if he was willing to say that glib belittling the Constitution had something to do with the party that he supports sort of unzipping its fly and urinating all over the first sentence of Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, where it says the validity of the debt shall not be challenged or questioned. I think questioned is the word, isn't it? Shall not be questioned. Well, everything that just happened is a matter of questioning the validity of the public debt. And yes, I'd say when you're doing it all liquored up like the Repiglicans were, well, that's pretty effing glib, isn't it? But back to Rick Joyner.
We're headed for serious tyranny. I think we've been used in some wonderful and powerful ways by God. We've been one of the most generous nations in history. We've done so much good, and that's why...
I hate it when God uses me. I always wake up sticky, broken, confused. We're headed for some serious tyranny, you know. I mean, this isn't your low-rent tyranny. This isn't your pissant tyranny. This is the serious tyranny. This is the one where they march you off to the Obama freedom re-education camps, and you come out with those glazed eyes, and you say things like, look forward, not back. And you say things like, you say things like, I want insurance companies to get welfare from the government for providing health insurance for profit. That's some serious tyranny.
Appeal to the Lord. Don't let us be totally destroyed. Please raise up those who will save us. And as I start telling friends for a long time, that no election is going to get the right person in there that can...
Wait a minute. Okay. I think this deserves to be... Yeah. Let's go back.
One of the most generous nations in history. We've done so much good. And that's why I appeal to the Lord. Don't let us be totally destroyed. Please raise up those who will save us.
This guy has an adjective and adverb problem. The goddess of irony, the only possible existing deity, and even she's marginal, would have a field day with this guy's prayers. Serious tyranny, right? Serious tyranny. And then I'm imploring God not to let us be totally destroyed. Partially? 95%? How destroyed are you? Okay with us being there, doing your praying as you're imploring? Well, yeah.
Lord, don't let us be totally destroyed. Please raise up those who will save us. And as I've started telling friends for a long time, that no election is going to get the right person in there that can restore us, because the system is so broken, so undermined right now, the whole system.
No election is going to get the right person in there? How then, pray tell, are we going to get the right person in there?
I believe our only hope is a military takeover, martial law.
You got it? Thanks, Right Wing Watch. I wait all night for clips like these. Our only hope is a military takeover. Got that? This is a guy whose organization doesn't pay a penny in taxes because it is a 501c3 religious organization. And he just called for a military junta in the United States of America. Sense in the chat room notes, it's working well in Egypt. Note coming in from Kevin in Colorado Springs. Forces undermining and take over the government? I believe that would be that guy from Morningstar and the Republican Tea Party. Long live the Kenyan Socialist Affordable Care Act. May it become single payer someday. Signed, Kevin. Hear, hear. Jan and Jerry in Nevada. What the? Insurrection. Arrest him. And then, this from Dr. John. Another casualty of the shutdown. Science. Bob, colleagues are telling me that PubMed has been down, not updated, and glitchy all day. What is PubMed? No, it is not a beer joint in the Caribbean next to the resort. No. What is PubMed? It's a database of over 22 million citations and complete articles in the life and biomedical sciences. It's maintained by the National Institutes of Health. This is where biologists, for instance, go to learn what their colleagues are discovering about, say, the ways a bacterium reacts to certain drugs. You know, for treatment and research, to make people's lives better. PubMed has a note when you go to it. Due to an interruption in funding, this database is being maintained with a minimum of staff. We can't respond to inquiries or help requests at this time. I.e., your potentially life-saving research will just have to wait because the Republicans shut the government down. What did that millionaire freak from Arizona say? It's not a government shutdown. It's a government slowdown. See, that's the thing. I was talking about a general strike earlier. Please, understand. The Republican Party just did that. They went on strike, and they took our government hostage. And now, over the coming days and perhaps weeks and maybe a month, who knows, maybe longer, they're going to start sending various chopped off pieces of the government out as a confirmation that they are willing to do the harm that they have promised to do. God Almighty. Irish Dave noting, well, you know, it is a classic. The only way to save democracy is to, you know. Jack in Shreveport. Isn't there a saying that if you got your health, you got everything? So if you don't, well, you get it. Son of a bitch, Bob. I got no health insurance either, which means I live in fear every single freaking day. How the so-called greatest military in the world makes up for that doesn't relieve that fear in any way at all. And by the way, as we get near the close of the filibuster, I think, by the way, thanks going out to Karen and to Randy, who have thus far matched $60 of Shirley's first of the month Wisconsin challenge. Let's see, $90 to go, and we'll be on the way to getting through October. I know I'm being optimistic, but there's hope. And by the way, this too, just because it's so easy to get wrapped up in these sorts of issues, that I think there is value in looking out into the wider world and imagining, for instance, what would happen if something like this happened here at home during the shutdown. The report is from Agence France-Presse. The operator of the crippled Fukushima nuclear reactor plant, nuclear plant, said Tuesday, workers had spilled 4 tons of radioactive water, likely contaminating the soil and possibly groundwater. Workers were pumping rainwater that was trapped in a concrete gutter into an empty 12-ton tank that sat on open soil. The work crew started operating the pump around 10:38 a.m. At 11:50 a.m., they found water was spilling from the manhole on top of the tank. TEPCO has estimated roughly 4 tons of collected rainwater might have escaped. The extent of contamination was unclear, but the TEPCO spokesman says they don't think it was highly polluted. The spokesman said the water itself was rainwater, but it was from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant and could contain radioactive materials. The water seeped into the ground. And then this, just to sort of keep an eye on things. While various and sundry members of the for-profit media were freaking out that they couldn't log on to healthcare.gov to do a phony baloney registration for the Affordable Care Act because the story is about the people doing the story now. You get the idea. While the for-profit media were busy doing that, or hollering both sides do it, or creating some other sort of bullshit false equivalency, they were having a little meeting. Up in New York City, at the United Nations. And it wasn't just any meeting at the United Nations. Today, they brought in the Circus Act. Today, Bibi Netanyahu got to talk. Might as well have brought in Sterling Hayden with his costume from Dr. Strangelove, except for Sterling being dead and everything. Getting all butch, Bibi Netanyahu, who should never even be allowed to run with scissors, let alone run a country, said, Israel will not allow Iran
to get nuclear weapons. If Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone. In other words, we'll blow the whole damned world up and let y'all watch if you don't join us in slaughtering some people that we've determined need slaughtering. It was pretty sick to behold. And of course, Bibi, when the voices weren't completely overcoming his ability, the voices in his head weren't completely overcoming his ability to speak, made clear that you just can't trust those Waskawi Persians.
He fooled the world once. Now he thinks he can fool it again. You see, Rouhani thinks he can have his yellow cake and eat it too.
Oh my goodness, that is a knee slapper. He thinks he can have his yellow cake and eat it too. Oh my goodness gracious, that's every bit as funny now as it was in 2003. Oh my.
And he has another reason to believe that he can get away with this.
Another reason? Really?
And that reason is called North Korea. Like Iran, North Korea also said its nuclear program was for peaceful purposes. Like Iran, North Korea also offered meaningless concessions and empty promises in return for sanctions relief. In 2005, North Korea agreed to a deal that was celebrated the world over by many well-meaning people. Here's what the New York Times editorial had to say about it. Quote, "For years now, foreign policy insiders have pointed to North Korea as the ultimate nightmare, a closed, hostile, and paranoid dictatorship with an aggressive nuclear weapons program. Very few could envision a successful outcome. And yet North Korea agreed in principle this week to dismantle its nuclear weapons program, return to the NPT, abide by the treaty's safeguards, and admit international inspectors. And finally, diplomacy, it seems, does work after all." Ladies and gentlemen, a year later, North Korea exploded its first nuclear weapons device. Yet, as dangerous as a nuclear-armed North Korea is, it pales in comparison to the danger of a nuclear-armed Iran. A nuclear-armed Iran would have a chokehold on the world's main energy supplies. It would trigger nuclear proliferation throughout the Middle East, turning the most unstable part of the planet into a nuclear tinderbox.
Am I the only one that can't help a little bit of at least a smirk when he said it would trigger an arms race in the Middle East? Because, I mean, is it just me, or is Israel the only country over there sitting on a nuclear stockpile between, say, the east coast of the Mediterranean Sea and the borders of Pakistan? I mean, there's India, but... yeah. But Iran would be twiggling that. But he wasn't done. Oh, hell no. Not batshit Bibi.
And for the first time in history, it would make the specter of nuclear terrorism a clear and present danger.
Because nuclear terrorism has never been a clear and present danger with Israel sitting on all of those weapons and people who are just really woohoo, crazy like Bibi Netanyahu with his finger on the button. No danger from that. We can trust them, sure.
A nuclear-armed Iran in the Middle East wouldn't be another North Korea. It would be another 50 North Koreas.
50? How'd you come by the number there, Beeb? I mean, did that just kind of crop into your crazy little head?
Now, I know that some in the international community think I'm exaggerating this threat. Sure, they know that Iran's regime leads these chants, death to America, death to Israel, that it pledges to wipe Israel off the map. But they think that this wild rhetoric is...
No, stop it. This what? What'd you say there, Bibi von Stupp?
Make the specter of nuclear terrorism a clear and present danger. A nuclear-armed Iran in the Middle East wouldn't be another North Korea. It would be another 50 North Koreas. Now, I know that some in the international community think I'm exaggerating this threat. Sure, they know that Iran's regime leads these chants, death to America, death to Israel, that it pledges to wipe Israel off the map. But they think that this wild rhetoric is just bluster for them.
He did. I had to double check. But he did. His mother is Lily von Stupp. Wild rhetoric.
To prove our friendship, it is customary at this time to release a wanderer from our prison. Whom would you have me release?
Release Boya!
I shall release Borgia!
We don't have a Borgia, sir.
What?
We don't have anyone of that name, sir.
Ah. We have no Borgia.
Well, what about Wodowit, then?
Yeah!
Centurion, why do they titter, sir?
Just some Jewish jokes, sir.
Are they wagging me? Oh, no, sir. Very well. I shall release Roderick.
Sir, we don't have a Roderick either.
No Walter, no Roderick.
Sorry, sir.
Who is this what? Who is this Roderick to whom you refer? He's your mother!
Wiping!
He found a notorious criminal.
We haven't got him, sir.
Do we have anyone in our prisons at all?
Oh, yes, sir. We got Samson, sir.
Samson?
Samson, the Sadducee strangler, sir. Silas, the Syrian assassin. Several seditious scribes from Caesarea. 67...
Let me speak to them,
good idea, because...
Pity them! We have Samson the Sadducee strangler, Silas the Assyrian assassin, several seditious scribes from Caesarea, and...
Wild Wetwick. So we will, take a little break. Come back to your calls, 304-658-3333 or Bob Kincaid Horn on the Skype line. Either way is fine by me. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, and Bob Kincaid on Facebook. All there in a myriad means of communicating and carrying on what we like to call conversation radio, which is this, which is the horn.
We'll be right back. It's Tuesday, October 1, 2013.
Let me repeat this. It does not have to happen.
Government shutdown, Palooza begins, and it affects a lot of green stuff.
Smokey Bear, beware.
It's Yosemite National Park's 123rd birthday, but Yosemite's now closed too. Florida sues Georgia over water. India builds the world's largest solar plant. Plus,
BP says the number is about 103 million gallons. The federal government's experts say it's closer to 176 million.
BP back in court over Gulf oil disaster.
All of those disasters and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Maybe I'm just one of the few people. I'm just not. This doesn't impact me mentally.
Sean Hannity, now you're just trolling to be in our snarky comment section, aren't you? Yeah, well done. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of trolling, I got into a bit of a Twitter fight yesterday with Fox News dolt Eric Bolling, who called me a D-bag, by the way, because I corrected him. He said on air that Arctic ice was at a record size this year, and of course I corrected him and said, no, actually it's the sixth lowest all-time on the satellite record. So he called me a D-bag and a troll, and he blocked me on the Twitter.
He blocked you for facts?
He blocked me for facts. You can read the exchange between Eric Bolling and myself at bradblog.com. But yes, while Fox may be a fact-free zone, the Green News Report is not. So what facts do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
The Tea Party showdown becomes government shutdown.
Putting the American people's hard-earned progress at risk is the height of irresponsibility.
The United States federal government officially shut down on October 1st after congressional Republicans failed to extort concessions from the Obama administration. President Obama on Monday listed just a handful of the vital energy and environment services now shut down.
NASA will shut down almost entirely. Business owners would see delays in raising capital, seeking infrastructure permits, or rebuilding after Hurricane Sandy. Tourists will find every one of America's national parks and monuments, from Yosemite to the Smithsonian to the Statue of Liberty, immediately closed.
Tuesday is Yosemite National Park's 123rd birthday, but national parks are shut down. Yet, oil and gas drilling is not shut down. That continues on public lands.
So the oil and gas drilling that is going on inside the national forest and so forth, that continues?
Oh, yes.
But we can't go see them.
Right.
Got it.
Also shut down, the Environmental Protection Agency and its enforcement of clean water and clean air laws.
Well, what do we need clean water and clean air for anyway?
NOAA and NASA and their weather predictions also closed, although the National Weather Service does remain open. No cleanup at Superfund sites. No disease monitoring or flu program from the Centers for Disease Control. No coal mine safety inspections. No food safety inspections from the FDA.
What do we need food safety inspection for? Let's have a little fair and balance here. Shall we, Sarah Palin?
This is a pinprick. It is not the end of the world if there is a partial government shutdown.
There you go. Get over it, food hugger.
On the good side, oil price futures have dropped on the expectation of an economic slowdown. In other non-shutdown news...
You mean the rest of the world doesn't stop because of the government shutdown?
That's right. The BP Gulf oil spill trial starts its second phase in New Orleans this week to determine state, local, and federal damages and fines based on the total amount of oil that was released and whether BP acted with gross negligence or just regular negligence in compromising safety over speed.
So were they really negligent or were they really, really negligent? That's the fight here?
Yes, plaintiffs' lawyers accuse BP of repeatedly lying to officials about the flow rate of oil from the broken well. And oil is still impacting the Gulf, reports the Associated Press.
3 years later, damage is still evident.
It's shadowing the marsh. It's killing this marsh and the few mangrove trees that are in this area.
In U.S. water wars, Florida is suing Georgia over water. Florida is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to stop Georgia from taking too much water from Florida's upstream water supply. But there is some good news. India has announced plans to build the world's largest solar power plant that dwarfs anything constructed in the world so far. It is 4 times bigger than the 10 largest U.S. solar plants combined.
Impossible. Fox News told me solar is just a boutique energy. It'll never go anywhere. For much more on that and the other lies that Fox News tells you on a regular basis, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Radio. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Twenty-seven minutes past the hour. Thanks, Brad. Thanks, Desi. Even though, you know, it's not like it's live or anything; it's recording. But thanks nonetheless. I enjoy Tuesdays and Thursdays because I enjoy Brad and Desi's work. Let's go to the Skype line. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me?
I got you. Great.
Oh, great. Well, you know, I was thinking about that. You know, the Republicans. I don't know if people realize, but, you know, there's a 3.8% surtax on unearned income of the rich that funds part of this Affordable Care Act. So, you know, that's a good enough reason for them to freak out about it, too. I mean, that's a, you know, that's just a sizable tax on the people who earn $250,000 or above, and it's a tax on unearned income, stocks, bonds, that kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, I got to give old President Not Sure a little credit for sneaking that one in. So I figure that it's basically they're freaking out because rich people are having to fork out a bit to cover uninsured low-income people and working people via the insurance mechanism.
Oh, perish the thought.
Whatever. But, I mean, that's something that, you know, it's not put out there a lot, but, you know, I think that, you know, it's a part of their machinations. And just the idea of allowing people to get access to something they didn't have before is, you know, they just can't go with it. But, you know, there's just something seriously wrong with this country now. You know, I don't mean to be blasé about it, but it's just kind of, you know, just kind of stunning. And the Democrats are working my last nerve too, because, you know, they need to be coming out with saying, okay, well, you can keep the government shut until you get rid of these sequesters. We don't hear nothing like that from them.
No,
they're not doing anything for us. They are going along with the sequester, which to me speaks volumes about what's really going on here, a downsizing of standard of living across the board from both parties. You know, they, I mean, I don't want to have to bring, you know, Malcolm X and King into it, but it's one of them kind of plays. You know, you either go with Malcolm X and get your ass blown away, or you go with King and, you know, let us sit at the table. But it's that kind of party. It's like, you know, we're in between these two, you know, what I see as intractable situation. And we're the ones that are going to be not getting anything out of this. I trust the Democrats as far as I can throw them.
Well, yeah, I'd feel a lot better if they wouldn't, if they weren't treating the sequester as just the way things are. But you're absolutely right. And Charlie Pierce made the same point earlier today, or a similar point, insofar as there's nobody out there pushing back and saying, okay, no, this is what we need. I ran across a story before showtime, Sandra. Program time. You know, one of those things that just doesn't get noticed, but Bryce Covert over at Think Progress did notice that in the midst of all of this hullabaloo, the Congress also blew past reauthorizing temporary assistance for needy families. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. The block grant, see, since 2010, they've just reauthorized, and I mean, they've just continuing resolutioned it along, but September 30th was the drop-dead date for reauthorizing TANF. which is kind of important alongside, you know, WIC, which we talked about last night. This is, you know, these are block grants that go out to the states. Well, they ain't going.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, how very Roman of Obama to film a special message for the Don't Shoot Me crowd. I thought that was interesting.
Oh.
You're going to get paid. You'll get yours. You know what I mean? I'm like, damn. You know, it's just all, it really is outrageous because there's no reason, given who's in power and, you know, Obama has surrounded himself with sort of an Austrian taint about it. Yeah, you know, he's all about deficit reduction. That's all he's all about. And, now we're getting word of, oh, well, the Congress is trying to cough up, oh, we'll fund the parks, you know, we'll fund bits and pieces. And, you know, there's no reason for them not to try to, turn this into the new normal, like the sequester. And then we just have, a lot of people working for free.
Yeah, sort of a piecemeal government, involuntary servitude.
Right.
And I'm sorry. I mean, I know I had people on Facebook last night saying, no, I got to go to work. I'm required. I've got there. You know, I'm legally forbidden from striking.
Well, we're required to pay our debts too, but that seems to be in question. I mean, I'm sick of this sort of what is I have to do and what is not being done. And all of a sudden, you're concerned. You know, I mean, no. I mean, yeah, I understand people are worried about whatever, but I would be worried about working for nothing. Truth be told.
Yeah, and if you're working for what? I mean, and I know I. What the hell ever happened to the human? I mean, isn't the right to withhold labor an essential human right?
You know, I mean, I know Theresa May over in England. She's trying to get rid of their commitment to to human rights, but you know. I don't know. I think that, you know, this is just, this isn't like, I was, you know, I'm old enough for 95. I mean, I was kind of dizzy when paying attention, but, you know, I knew what was going on. And, this is like by far worse, you know.
Oh, I was an absolute, here. I've always been a news junkie, but I was tuned in and plugged up in 1995. And, you know, nobody's really drawn this line, so I'll go ahead and draw it. It was after the 1995 shutdown that we wound up with the impeachment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I just don't I just find the complacency from the time they did the sequester to now really troubling on the Democratic side. It's like, okay, yeah, you let them shut the government down. Well, yeah, great, but you're not making any demands. You're still playing defense, you know, when the Democrats should be coming out now and making their own demands that meet the needs of the citizenry. It's not that difficult, and I find their reticence troubling.
Did you catch the Ted Rall cartoon about?
Oh no, I haven't seen. No, was it good?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, Ted, there's not many people that Ted likes, and God knows Barack Obama's not one of them. And Democrats are another. I think he doesn't. I think he dislikes Democrats more than Republicans for the same reason that people like you, me, the Horn family commune get frustrated with the Democrats. They won't go out and, well, it's what you just said. They play defense instead of pressing their own offensive. And he said maybe it's just jealousy. Maybe Democrats are jealous of the teabaggers and progressive people are jealous of the teabaggers. Because they actually act on their own, on their principles.
Well, yeah,
he's got this progressive saying, by God, we'll shut the government down if we don't get universal single payer health care, and by God, we'll shut the government down if we don't put some Wall Streeters in jail, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, no, but it's just it's on top of that. They don't respond in kind, but they still get told, oh, both sides do it. It's like, where is the ice pick, please?
All day long, Sandra.
If it was true, that would be one thing. I'd be like, oh, well, yeah, it's a battle, and let's pop the popcorn. But it's not. It's the Republicans doing it all. When was the last time Democrats shut down the government? Counting, waiting, anybody?
Yeah, see, Bueller? No.
No, it never. So, you know, like I tweeted, I said, shit, it's all a lot, it's all like the 1880s, 1850s up in here, maybe California might want to make some secessionist moves. Fuck this.
Well, you know, let the two crazy counties go and form up the state of Jefferson. And, but you mentioned California. Did you see the Rob Schneider story?
Oh no, you know I really haven't been. Paying
I know, no, this is celebrity crap, but it has a little bit of relevance. The man who gave us Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he's declared that he hasn't made a movie in 7 years in California. And he won't make one anytime soon because of Democrats and the Democratic supermajority in the State House in Sacramento.
Don't let the door hit your ass.
Yeah. I mean... What?
You know, no, I mean, whatever. You know, it's just sort of a running joke, supermajority, and all of a sudden you got minimum wage and you got undocumented folks being able to drive. And you got rich people paying more in taxes. That's what a supermajority on our side will do. And I don't see no rich people fleeing because, once again, for them too, don't let the door hit your ass. This is California. All that gibberish about we're losing business and people can't, they still here. Okay?
Yeah, there aren't just like endless miles of vacant buildings and boarded up storefronts. And no.
Well, I'm just saying, it's just, you know, the sort of scaremonger, and it's a shame that it has to operate this way. But we had, you know, decades of Prop 13, which annihilated a very good situation in California, educational wise. It was obliterated, and God knows how long it's going to take to, you know, get the public education system back in some sort of reasonable condition. So, no, I'm okay if Republicans don't ever get back in a position of any kind of anything in this state.
Well, doesn't the Federal House of Representatives give us a pretty good idea, or any state being led by Republican majorities? Look at North Carolina, for God's sakes.
Yeah, no. It's, you know, it's terrible what's going on there, and it's terrible what's happening in Congress. I just, you know, because I'm just wondering, just I don't see anything. I don't know what's going to bring it to a close. And as far as the debt ceiling thing is, that whole October 7th, they're full of shit, because if the government is shut down, then I don't really see the debt ceiling needing to be raised on that day they're talking about. So that's another bit of bullshit they're feeding us, because they're not the borrowing costs will go down and all this sort of stuff, so that date can be pushed out. So listen to the lies if they start talking about, oh, we need to do this on the 15th, because you can't shut a government down and say we need to raise all this money. You can't have both.
No, and I just looked at it. Where's the incentive? Because we all act, you know, within capitalism's rubric, we all act in enlightened self-interest. Where is the incentive to do anything about the debt ceiling in the middle of October?
Well,
I mean, I think
it,
zero, none.
No, but I just mean, you know, I'm sure the GEO, one of those budget offices, will come out with, or the Treasury will come out with, we have X number of days. I'm just saying that October 17th, in light of this shutdown, if it continues on, it can't be the same date. That's all I'm saying. So, you know, in the world of sort of manufactured propaganda, you know, that's just a date to look out for, it being a bunch of BS. And if it is a bunch of BS and they really are willing to default, then I think there's, you know, must be a coup has happened or something weird has gone on. I'm sorry. I don't mean to go there, but I'm just thinking, because it don't make no sense for this country to sort of obliterate its credit because of this, you see? And I was like...
But the teabaggers have gone all burn, baby, burn, Sandra. I mean, they have.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, you know, we're still talking about an event that would be unprecedented for this country and the world, and these sort of rich bastards would suffer quite a bit. So I'm just a bit confused by what's going on. I mean, did Hoover's Treasury Secretary come back to life and I missed it? Jay, whatever his name was, liquidate that fool, because this is all just, it's really out of hand and just kind of, I don't know. I don't really have anything coherent about it, but I must shift to something right quick. Listen, you know, I have my, quadriplegic watch, but Peyton Manning is playing his fucking ass off.
Oh my God.
What's happening? I'm waiting for that fool to be laid out, done, but my goodness.
Well, I tell you what, it's been pretty breathtaking to watch, Sandra. But did you happen to catch the biopic on ESPN called The Book of Manning?
Oh no, you know what? No, when I saw his crack talking, I thought, oh no, I can't handle
it. I caught it at about 2:30 in the morning, and I sat there and watched. Not a bad piece of documentary filmmaking there, and it kind of explains why he would do what he would do. I mean, you know, his big brother Cooper, the oldest of the Mannings, has a straight scar down the back of his spine from where he never got to be a wide receiver for Ole Miss.
Oh, okay.
And so, the sense of competition inside that family, I'm not saying it's Bush-like, but it's pretty intense. John Fox is doing something right in Denver. There's no getting around it. But last night Drew Brees looked like he wasn't going to sit around and just, you know, wait for Peyton Manning to
that was an outstanding performance too. What in the world? But then at home they seemed to just really light up, and also they got the criminal back home, the coach.
Oh yeah, Peyton. Yeah.
You know, let's be honest. He must know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, but I thought of you immediately the other night when I read the Lane Kiffin story.
No, what's going on with that fool?
Oh no, that was beautiful. So by the time the game was over, after Arizona State was just stomping the guts out of USC.
Oh, sad.
And the whole stadium was chanting "Fire Kiffin, Fire Kiffin."
Shut up.
Pat Hayden, the AD, is having a little tete-a-tete with the president of USC down on the sidelines. So they're getting on the bus at the airport coming home, and all of a sudden, Pat Hayden comes and gets Lane Kiffin, and says, "We got to go have a talk." And so Lane Kiffin turns to the bus driver and says, "Well, just hold the bus." And Pat Hayden goes, "Don't hold the bus." Bus goes on. They take him into a little room in LAX or wherever, like he's Edward Snowden or something. And Pat Hayden just fires his ass.
Oh, shoot. No, you see, that's what I guess I'm out to lunch. I didn't hear that one. Sorry.
And Lane Kiffin is such a miserable little shit weasel.
Ain't he?
Yeah. I mean, it could not happen to a better guy.
Oh my God! No, that's hilarious. No, that sounds epic.
And then, as a sort of ultimate insult, they elevated his coordinator Ed Orgeron to the head coaching spot. So apparently, Ed slipped the shiv in his in the guy who brought him to USC in the first place's ribs. It's a beautiful little soap opera taking place down there.
Oh no! Well, that's. Yeah,
but I just love that image of Lane hold the bus and Pat Hayden going, "Don't hold the bus."
Oh no, but he is that sort of figure though. So I mean, I'm not really surprised, but that program is a hot mess, huh?
Oh yeah, I mean after the whole Reggie Bush thing, and then last year there was the deflated football scandal. Oh my God! And then of course, you know, Lane Kiffin took a big steamer on the University of Tennessee, you know, a proud SEC school,
yeah.
And you know, you just don't do that.
No, no, he definitely burnt a bridge there. But see, I'm not understanding how. I understand that USC did whatever they did, and you know, whatever. But I'm sorry, Penn State is getting everything back.
Yeah, that
you know, you rate people for decades, and you know, I'm sorry.
And look the other way, and all of that.
What did I miss? Why, you know, all of a sudden, you know, so.
They're looking forward and not back, Sandra.
Oh, God. So they taking a page out of Dear Leader, huh?
Yeah.
But, no, because that was a bit disturbing. I just thought, you know, along with that horrible Johnny football person.
Oh,
I mean,
Jesus.
It's just...
I'm waiting for him to run up against the defense that will just, you know, pancake him.
Well, no, that's why I was laughing during that game, because I was looking at Twitter, and Dr. John was like, I don't want to, but I gotta say, Roll Tide. I was dying, because, you know, that guy is so awful. Even if you have issues with Alabama, it's just no. Just no on him. He's so horrific.
And that happened to be the same Saturday that I was, for the first time in my life, wandering around Austin, Texas. And the game was on at the, apparently when you tailgate at the University of Texas in Austin, you bring the 72-inch big screen TV with you. I'm not kidding.
Oh,
And they're all sitting there watching Alabama and Texas A&M, all these people in burnt orange just, you know, hollering Roll Tide. Hell, it might as well have been Tuscaloosa.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, that guy is so awful. So,
and will he stick around after this year? You know, I'm guessing no. But
I can't believe what a sort of insipid, horrible character that one is, though. It's amazing.
Oh, he really does. He has all the makings of being Ryan Leaf for the 2010s.
Oh yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, yeah.
I hope that for him too.
I mean, I still can't get over that father. Well, we don't got Garth Brooks money, but I'm like, oh.
That's the standard now, is it?
Yeah, I was like, dude. Anyway.
But, you know, we got some oil change banging around.
God, it's just, you know, the whole setup there is quite, I mean, it's amusing, and it's always good to have characters to hate in sports, and he's a good one. Yuck.
Oh, no, he's odious. He's just nasty. He's a vile little ego. He didn't write the column, but I will always hold against him the fact that some Fox Sports goober felt compelled to compare him to Rosa Parks.
Oh, yeah, that's... You know what? No, I know Dave Zirin was like... Yeah, I thought his head was going to explode behind that BS, too, because he was tweeting some craziness about that whole article, which I thought was just outrageous. But, I mean, I'm not completely on the bandwagon, but, you know, I have to give the Patriots a little love because they just bounced Tebow like that. I mean, you cannot. I gotta say good things about it. Is what it is, Belichick. Yeah. And that shit was on.
And you know, if the hoodie can't make Tim Tebow into an NFL quarterback, can we just say it can't be done?
It can't be done, and goodbye. That was the thing that I liked. I was like, oh yeah, they showed his ass the door. But anyway,
and the fact that Gene Simmons of Kiss offered Tebow a contract to play for the Arena League in L.A. I mean,
that's precious.
Yeah, next stop lingerie league for.
He could be in West Hollywood all the damn time over there.
Manny and Petty.
He'd get whatever that was about. Sorry, I've been to West. I know you know there is. Why are you in West Hollywood, fool?
Never having been there, but I understand the cultural reference. Believe
you
me.
Understand. And you understand you can go somewhere else and get a pedicure. Shit, that's what I understand. Anyway.
We're awful. Yeah. We're awful.
I know, I'm terrible. But you know what, Bob? I just been sort of completely not plugged in, you know? And so I don't have nothing else for you or the horn.
Well, that's okay. Sometimes you have to distance yourself just to remain sane.
Yeah, but it's all really getting—it's all quite disturbing. So,
right, and you're right though, Sandra. This is not a popcorn moment. This is some pretty serious damn business that's going on. And I'll be honest with you. I'm expecting if it plays out, you know, they're saying they're going to have these piecemeal deals. Okay, here's a bill for the Park Service. Here's a bill so that the World War II veterans won't crash the barricades at the World War II monument anymore. And President Not Sure says he'll veto every last one of them. And if he does that, then we have to talk about the Andrew Johnson administration, at which point, I mean, I expect, frankly, I expect impeachment proceedings before New Year's.
Well, I don't really know. He's going to have to do something that may take it to the courts. I mean, you know what I mean?
Well, but what about the so-called 14th Amendment option?
Well, it would end up in the courts.
Yeah,
right?
One presumes, but the thing is, once it's done, how do you undo it?
Well, I was joking with Isaac that Obama's going to be the first black president and the last U.S. president, but I'm starting to think I might want to pull that one back in. you know, because I don't know. Shit is looking pretty bleak.
I mean, there's 200 and how many members of the House in the Republican caucus, and, 28 of them are down for this fight. And of the 28, that's Louie Gohmert, 1L Michelle, Steve King, the crowd that went to Egypt.
Well, is that true that they were drunk? I mean, I remember seeing a few stories like that.
I saw the first story come out over the weekend, it was over the weekend, and it was a tweet from a reporter for Politico, and then there's a tweet from a reporter for Huffington Post, and another tweet, and another tweet, and another tweet, and apparently it sounded like the rotunda of the Capitol smelled like an Irish pub at 3 a.m.
Mm.
And that's not a slur. I mean, I love Irish pubs at 3 a.m., but, you know, the smell of booze is the smell of booze.
Yeah.
All of that horde were just stinking with it, but none of the reporters had the nerve to say a name, except for Alan Grayson, who has repeatedly pointed out that John Boehner is a high-functioning alcoholic.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, when he was there mimicking Obama, he looked drunk. I'm like, is this dude never not drunk?
Cigarette in one hand, and Merlot in the other, and I think he's even given up the balloon glasses. He's just unscrewing the top and having at it.
Oh God! But no, but it was just sort of pathetic him doing his. I just thought, oh my God, this is so base. And I just had a vision of, you seen some of those drawings from the 1850s inside the Congress? I mean, they battling, like fist fighting. You know what I mean?
We are inches away from that.
I mean, once again, you know, people miss out on a lot by not knowing some of the history of this country, because it's, beside it being horrifying, it's pretty damn entertaining. And, you know, it helps when you can think of, ooh, the Buchanan administration, and look at this shit right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's scarily similar on some...
The whole thing, and, you know, when Dr. Bill, who... knows that era back and forth. He agrees that this country is as badly or worse divided than at any time in our country's history, short of 1859 to 1860.
Well, and it's unfortunate because, like Buchanan, Obama is trying to accommodate everybody and accommodating no one. I mean, granted, Buchanan was dealing with whole regions, you know, but. There's some, Obama needs to be careful, because I wasn't too sure about the impeachment stuff, but yeah, you know, it could easily.
Well, just to give you a sense of how bizarre it can get, I was minding my own business earlier today when I got a text from my son at high school, and all it says is politics gone mad in business math. And so I'm thinking, I don't want to get him in trouble, so I'm not going to text him back and ask him, you know, what's up. So when he gets home from school today, he comes in and he says, Dad, you would not have believed it in business math. I said, what? And he said, they decided to talk about the government shutdown, and they went absolutely out of their mind. And according to Ferg, and who has no reason to stretch the truth, the teacher in that classroom referred to that N-word Obama, said it out loud.
Yeah, well.
And we then had a conversation about morals and ethics and dedication to principles. And he said, Dad, it took a lot of guts for me to go back into this school. I'm going to shut up and pass the class.
There are priorities.
And I hauled out, you know, the only thing that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. He said, yeah, but they won't do anything at the school board. They won't do anything anywhere. So, you know, I can't take much issue with him, but I mean, the racial vitriol has just gone through the roof. And it's worth remembering that, you remember that guy who did the survey based on Google searches, and it turns out that West Virginia is the single most racist state in the union?
Right.
Well, there was living proof. There's living proof of it, apparently, inside a little tiny high school in Fayette County, West Virginia.
Well, wasn't it in West Virginia where that principal was threatening that girl with her scholarship to Wellesley?
I
mean, so it seems to be, you know, problematic across the isms in that state.
Oh, it's a mess. And the thing is, I mean, did you catch that on the Green News report? In the course of the shutdown, there will be no mine inspections.
Well, right. No. I mean, there's no food. Yeah, the mine stuff is like, oh, boy. And the food, too. So these people who are working are going to be just sort of doing whatever, huh, with no protection?
Yeah, and most of them are non-union in the first place.
Right. So
they don't even have, you know, they don't need the, because if you're working in a hole and it's a union hole, you can say, I ain't going to do that, and you've got the union to protect you. But the union is all but dead, the UMWA. And as a consequence, you know, if you're just some poor bastard, you know, working there, you know, down, because, you know, I don't consider mountaintop removal workers to be miners in the first place. But, you know, it gets real dangerous down there. And with no threat of inspection hanging over them, well, a few years ago, Don Blankenship wrote that infamous memo where he said, if you're not running coal, you're not working. Work like you mean it. We are not in the safety business.
Oh, God, that guy.
So, I mean, that's kind of frightening.
No, that is. I mean, well, this is the first full day, right? So we're on to day two.
Right, and just like the Republicans said, well, you know, I mean, the sequester, it's not really going to affect that many people. It's not that many. And we got into about day three, and they found out that the flights were not landing on time, and there were no overnight air traffic controllers and so forth. And then suddenly they crafted a fix for that. Well,
right.
it'll take a couple or three days for the full gravity of this to kick in. Today, the for-profit media was all about, well, you can't go to the Grand Canyon, you can't go to the Statue of Liberty, and then the BS about, how, you know, well, apparently there are glitches in the Obamacare computer system, as if, you know, he personally wrote the code for it, right?
Well, I mean, I'm still tripping on the fact that federal firefighters have to work for nothing. I'm like, you know what? Uh-uh. All that is just outrageous that these people are expected to perform. You know, like slaves.
Exactly, and back to the original point.
Mm.
Well, it is not the right to withhold one's labor an essential human right? And if it's not, then it's involuntary servitude, and that's a form of slavery, and let's go talk about the 13th Amendment.
No, it's true. I mean,
See, Sandra, we don't talk in those terms about labor in this country anymore.
No, I mean, labor is subjected to so many restrictions, unlike corporations, by the same master, the government. It's amazing that, and people don't even ever make the, you know, they never look at capital at all, but they're forever scrutinizing labor, you know?
Right, because labor is deemed to be the problem. And and that sort of denies all of that stuff that Lincoln. Remember what Lincoln said about the most important part of the production process is labor, because capital can't without people working.
Well, that's all just over. That's gone. That's done, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, the government seemed definitely have, you know, I mean, the government picks all the economic winners, so, and labor is a big loser in that little game.
Oh, by the way, one last thing about Tebow. I just got a photo from Duncan. They were flying Tim Tebow banners over the Jacksonville Jaguars games.
Oh, please, let him go down there.
I want him back in the NFL. I need somebody to really and truly despise.
Well, there's that rapist. They hating on him because they losing. So that's always, that never gets old. Some of the tweets were like, the rapist? You know what I mean? Just like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I shouldn't laugh.
No, the Twitterverse is a bizarre and sort of overwrought place.
Oh, no. Some of this is, the football stuff is great on the Twitter. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But anyway,
Keith Olbermann's doing a pretty good job having come back to ESPN.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
He's actually, I think he's more in his element there than he was with news. And it's kind of fun to watch. But Sandra, it's been great. And, you know, don't stay too unplugged for too long, okay?
I'm sure I won't, especially if this stuff kicks off. Anyway, have a good evening.
All right, you too. Later.
Okay.
Bye now. Yeah, because see, when we don't hear from Sandra, I start getting cranky emails. Yeah, where's Sandra? She has her own fan club. Let's keep it rolling. I suspect that this is Jeremy in Vermont. Is this Jeremy in Vermont?
Yeah, it is. Sorry, thanks for holding me off for a minute there.
Oh, no worries.
I witnessed today people who on social media who really do have the burn baby burn mentality, and you know Malloy kind of went at it the same angle as he'd like to see the whole system come down, a new system go up, but he's not the same mentality as these teabaggers and these Iranian wannabes who really want to see things burn and can't wait to live in a world where there's no help, there's no systems to check meats, check the right particle of rat shit in your cereal.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, remember the story, Jeremy, about the new USDA program that was an abject failure in Canada and New Zealand and so forth, that they're going to go ahead and roll out anyway? I guess the shutdown slowed that up, but now the same standards are being applied to chickens.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, great. Yeah, you want your chicken with medium feces or extra feces? Well, everything's extra feces now.
Right. And I don't know. There's another post I saw how veterans weren't letting the blockade at the National Mall stop them from going to see their monuments, and they still went and saw them, so that was kind of interesting. But this whole thing is so out of control, and I really feel for the people that are affected by this.
Well, I do too. And like I said, as it goes on, it is going to become more and more profound. Especially, this is not 1995, because we have, you know, we have the austerity of the sequester in place too. And Sandra's absolutely right. The Democrats are doing nothing about the sequester.
Granted, there's probably more people, and well, maybe not. Hard to say. Vermont's a small state, even though it's bigger, probably mileage-wise, than West Virginia. But we were told by the news last night, and it's the same right-wing group that this morning couldn't wait to ask, are you having trouble looking up your health care, the new whatever website they set up? They were beating on it last night, trying to say how some Tea Party screwball who didn't get elected this last time is saying that the health care system isn't going to work, and the website's not set up, and the government can't handle it. Well, no, they can't handle it when they're half shut down. That's part of the whole problem.
Yeah, that's the thing that drove me a little crazy. I couldn't register. We're in a shutdown. I mean, what, do you live under a rock?
Right,
but, you know, I expect next to nothing from the for-profit media anyway.
Right, neither do I. And I just kind of was scratching my head like, really? This is what you guys want to cover first thing when there's, I know of at least 1,000 guards people that get laid off here and literally laid off here in Vermont. That doesn't count for the civilian contractors that worked for some of the guard in different duties whether it be shipping in materials or whatever. So we've taken a big hit. And those people don't have a real paycheck coming in anytime they know of, really nothing guaranteed. Yeah, they'll get paid eventually, but eventually it doesn't help you when your family's starving already and you're already on food stamps. Now you're really depending on those food stamps.
Right, and the power company doesn't accept eventualities.
Right, because the sad truth is many more gooses because they do. And really,
it's called a poverty draft.
Right, they really, really try to sucker in, shall we say, some of the people from ghetto areas because they promise them this problem, promise them that, and then they can't pay back what they promised them. Or they bring someone in and promise them college when they know damn well they're never going to go to college, so they don't have to pay that back ever again anyway. And then these people keep re-enlisting because they don't see another option.
I think the end game now in D.C. is this notion that the Democratic caucus has bought into, that the Republicans have finally been given enough rope and now they're going to hang themselves and pay a price come November 2014. I'm not that optimist. I don't buy that for a minute. I don't think there is any reason to suspect that there will be enough changeover. That there will be enough Democratic challenges victorious against Republican incumbents to change the makeup of the House. I just don't.
Yeah, I had a friend last night who posted something as soon as the news came across our little right-wing channel here in Vermont that the government was officially partially shutting down, and all he put across was dumbasses. And I commented on it, and basically he gave across the same sentiment. I said, I hope they'll pay in the next election cycle. He said, he was very skeptical of it, too, and said that, I don't think so. He said, most Americans think their senator or their congressman would just great. Nothing's going to change. We're in the same song and dance.
Well, and even if you don't like your member of Congress, consider what Sergi told us once upon a time about the first congressional district of Texas and Louie Gohmert. That district is drawn specifically to keep Louie Gohmert in office.
And a lot of them are now. They're made that way. Specifically the way they're drawn,
right,
so that their supporting voters have a majority of the vote over people who don't like them.
Precisely.
It's a rigged game. You once you're in, you're usually in for a while if you're someone that plays by the numbers. And
yeah, I mean, the polling data is out to the extent that the American people blame the Republican Party for this shutdown. There's no doubt about that. But these are national polls. Go and do a poll in the first district, and Duncan Sparky in the chat room pointing that out, but go and run a poll in Louie Gohmert's district. Go run a poll in Steve King's district. Go run a poll in Steve Stockman's district. And you know what? You're going to find that they're going to be reelected. And I think you would find that almost across the board. These teabaggers want this country to burn, Jeremy. There's no way around it. I mean, they want to see that, and that's the thing. They've already got a vision for what they're going to build out of the ashes. I mean, see, it's real easy when I play these clips of these religion industry zealots. It's real easy to say, oh, that's funny. Oh, that crazy fundamentalist. Dang, huh? Well, they're serious, Jeremy. I mean, when you've got a tax-exempt 501c3 religious broadcaster taking to the airwaves, calling for a military coup to remove the President of the United States, duly elected, from office, I mean, that's kind of a watershed moment.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring up that quote about some people just want to let it burn, because that was included in the last incarnation of Batman. Alfred tells Bruce Wayne that at one point when he's injured and can't do anything, and basically tells him, there's some people you can't get to. They just want to watch the world burn. And if you watch that movie, there's a huge, huge kind of hint towards groups and the Tea Party and people who just want to see things destroyed, basically, and the rich and the powerful who don't care about anyone else around them.
I mean, consider this. This just came in from Randy in PA.
He says the state of Pennsylvania leans Democratic overall, but 13 of 18 members of the U.S. House of Representatives are Republican. Well, that's not by accident. That's not by some sort of electoral happenstance. It's because of the way the districts are drawn. See, I keep saying, Jeremy, that the really it's a grim thing to get hold of with your head. But realistically speaking, the first viable chance to see significant change in the makeup of the House of Representatives is the election of November 2022. Because that's the first midterm election after the next census.
You know, these Tea Party people are embedded in more places than you'd like to think they're embedded. They're not necessarily in Congress or in the Senate. I posted something on your Facebook before you took my call. Basically, it's a picture of Obama taking a glass of wine, and it says, "A Kenyan, a Muslim, and an illegal alien walk into a bar. The bartender says, 'What's up, Mr. President?'" That person that posted that works for the government. He's immigration. He's a customs enforcement agent.
Jesus. Damn. That's frightening. Hey, Jeremy, you have yourself a good evening. Thanks for waiting. I really appreciate it. I enjoy our conversations.
No problem.
All right. Take it easy.
Yeah, I'm going to. Bye.
Bye. Jeremy calling from Vermont, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Dope. God, I was at the courthouse today. Unbelievable. I had to go to the courthouse. I had to go down to the federal courthouse. It's gay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that. So I went down to the courthouse today. A friend of mine, I had to serve a motion for her, for her case. And I got down there and I went, oh my God, it's going to be open or not. Oh, they're open. Come on. Same, you know, business as usual down there. They said that they would be open for a month, which is plenty of time to.
Well, it's all a matter of what's determined to be or classified as essential services.
Right. Exactly. Important enough. That's exactly right.
And so judicial business probably is.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, it was no different than any other day. I was a little bit worried when I was driving down there because I thought, oh, about the government shutdown. And my friend emailed me this thing and I went to go print it, and I printed it at home, actually. I printed it at home, and then I was taking it down there, and it just flashed on me, oh, my God, the government shutdown. I wonder what this is going to be like. But it was no different. Yeah, so it was really rainy and wet and cool this weekend.
Well, you're getting a lot of that. I saw driving rain on during football broadcasts over the weekend. That's how I learn about weather across the country this time of year, is watching football games on Saturday.
Gotcha. Well, it was sunny now. Sunny, but it's a lot cooler. We're in the, you know, low 60s or high 50s or something like that. Not summer anymore.
No.
Summer's over. But, yeah, this is just this stuff. I sometimes just get sick of listening to the politics. It's like a puppet show. It is a puppet show. And, you know, people go to Washington. I mean, I had a friend that went to Washington, and she was camped out in the Department of Justice, and she never got to talk to anybody. It seemed futile. I don't know. It seems like, you know, the so-called the decision makers or whatever it is, political elite, it's like talking to Jerry Mahoney Obama and Knucklehead Boner. And it's like, you know, talking to...
Yeah, but Dave, I see, that's almost a little too much duality for me. Because the fact of the matter is, Knucklehead Boner is the problem is not generated. The business of crafting a continuing resolution is, generally speaking, pretty dull business in the Congress.
Sure is. Should be.
It should be. And, the President of the United States has the right, as President of the United States, to think that once a law has been passed and even approved, passed as constitutional by the Supreme Court, that the debate is over.
And this is entirely generated by an insurgent Republican Party that will not take, that will not accept losing. I mean, this is like a 9-year-old landing on boardwalk with a hotel on it and just saying, "I refuse to pay," and turning the board over.
Okay.
I mean, I know the politics gets annoying, but we must guard against pretending or being conned into believing that it is a situation of a pox on both your houses, because it simply isn't.
I think one side
is bad in this, and the other is, if not good, then at least better.
Not as bad, but by far the best choice. I think that that just dawned on me that maybe that's why the Republicans, they walk in such lockstep, is because they're all puppets, and they're all just puppets. So that's the way they're told to go the way they're told.
Well, if you're talking about the teabaggers, I think you're absolutely accurate. If you're talking about some of the more corporate Democrats, I'll agree with that too. But we cannot make blanket statements like that. I don't think anybody's pulling Bernie Sanders' strings. I don't think anybody's pulling Alan Grayson's strings. I don't think anybody's pulling Raul Grijalva's strings or Keith Ellison's strings. Those are good progressives who are actually up there trying to do the business of the people. The fact that they are surrounded by a bunch of bribe-taking goons and half-insane, drunk-on-stump-liquor teabaggers is not the same thing as saying that everybody is the same. So, I just personally, Dave, I guard against being drawn into those false dualities and false dichotomies and both sides do it, and oh, it's a blame game, because I'm so cynical. I'm more cynical, frankly, about the for-profit media than I am about politics and government. The for-profit media will do anything to generate ad revenue, and if it takes saying both sides are equally guilty, then by God, that is what they will say. I don't care if it's Ashley Banfield or Chris Jensen or Jansing or Morning Joe and Mika or anybody else in the for-profit media. I do not care. Now, I trust Amy Goodman. I trust some journalists out there working in the blogosphere. But I don't trust anybody whose ad rates are measured in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per 30 seconds.
Well, Bob, can I talk?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I think you misunderstood me. I don't believe it's a dichotomy or good. I just think they're all controlled by the same force, and I think that it's like going to Washington is like going to the theater. If you want to affect the plot, you have to go to where the people who are making the decisions who are the writer's house. You go to the writer's house, then you're going to affect the plot. You're not going to affect it by going to the studio when the script is all laid out. I just when I see what's going on in government in recent years, more and more it just seems like political theater to me. It's not like I think that anybody that thinks it's both sides are just as bothered, they're not. Two sides. They're all on the one same side. And there are fringe people on the fringes, and I think that, these people on the fringes, like Bernie Sanders and Alan Grayson and some others, and Peter DeFazio here in Oregon, and even the teabaggers, I think they're more populist-driven, right or wrong. I just believe more that the mainstream is the money, and the money is I would hate to see people go to the streets. They need to go to the country clubs. That's where they need to go, because that's where the people that are making this mess are located. They're not in Washington. the ones in Washington are just the puppets. Don't you see? It's like you go to Beverly Hills, or you go to Bel Air, or you go to the rich suburbs in any city, and that's where the, you know, I mean, in this day of technology, thanks to technology, you know, they're watching our every move, but we can find out anything we want on the internet. We can find out all the CEOs' addresses and where they live and where they belong, and you know, I just think that going to Washington or going in, I've been to a lot of protests, and it just seems like they, you know, the cops are there armed to the teeth. I don't know. I'd still go, but I don't expect much positive result from that. On the other hand, you know, I think fighting on every front is good. I just don't believe in the political process in terms of, like, if we all got all Democrats in now, so many of them are so bought. It's like what happened between 2008 and 2010, which was, you know, people did the wrong thing by staying home and not voting. I voted. I always vote. But people made a big mistake by staying home and doing the wrong thing and not voting and letting lunatics in. But I just think that, you know, the mainstream media and the political elite in the mainstream, Dianne Feinstein or Harry Reid, or, you know, you wonder about our leadership, or the leadership in the Democratic Party. It's like, what do we have? We had Gephardt, and we had Tom Daschle, and we got Harry Reid, and these guys, it's no accident that these people are put in power. These weaklings are put in power for the frontline soldiers, you know? It's no accident. They're manipulated into power. They're put into power by the money that wants an outcome. And it's not what you or I want.
I don't think that's entirely an unfair assessment, but let's also give credit that maybe they wind up in those positions because they've been there a while and they've learned how the system works. And, I mean, the processes are largely similar for how you get a majority leader or a Speaker of the House or whatever from, you know, 1820 to 2013. It's a vote. Now, am I going to sit here and say that people with money can't go and influence who want? No, I'm not going to say that. It's entirely possible. But I'm just not quite willing to, I guess I'm not willing to entirely give up on the idea of this government. I think it can be good. I think it can be vastly better than it is.
I'm not either, but I'm just saying that the methods that are being used, that we've used in the past, are not working, and to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result is insanity. And maybe we're focusing our energy on the wrong people in the wrong places.
Okay, then let's take that next step. Where should it be focused?
Well, like I say, don't go to the streets, go to the country clubs. I'm not saying don't, but you can go to Washington, or you could go to the rich suburbs outside of Washington in Virginia, where the real decision makers are. I don't know. It just seems like Obama he's down with the banks. That's all there is to it. Everybody I know knows that, and I judge him by his character rather than by anything else. I think racism is the stupidest thing in the world, because, I mean, and all this talk about, it's just so idiotic. They're just doing this to us to divide people. And I just try to, you know, if I hear somebody saying something as ignorant as that, I just calmly look at them like they're a 5-year-old kid and try to calmly explain to them that what's really going on, and open their eyes to what's really going on, because it's like, I think a big goal is to divide people, to divide. It's a class warfare. It's not a racial warfare, and it's all about dividing us all down on the bottom so the people, the few on the top can divvy it all up, seems to me. And I mean, you know, I've been really lucky in my life. I've been able to experience a lot of different economic strata. I mean, I'm poor now, like everybody else. But, I mean, when I was a kid, I grew up in a family where we were sort of, we weren't elite, but we were on the fringe of the elite. I knew rich people. And you know, then when I was 19, I got to go to school, and I was going to this occupational center. I think I got cut out last time we were talking. I went to this occupational center in Canoga Park, and I met a guy that was from the inner city. And he encouraged me to go to this other school in South Central Los Angeles. It was a great tech school called Trade Technical College. And I went there for a year, and oh, man, I dug it. I loved the people over there. They were great people. And it was, you know, people are people. I think it actually, I really, you know, personally found the richer people to be more boring and just smug idiots, most of them. But there were nice people who had money too. But it just seems to me like people are people, and we have to communicate with people and you know, focus them on really what it is that they're fighting. I don't know. You know, I'm not a Christian. You know that.
Right. Nor am I.
But a lot of times it's like, you know, I think the reason why they put Christ on the cross was because this guy came to him and said, "Don't you see I have your life in my hands?" And Christ just looked at him calmly and told the truth. He said, "You have nothing in your hands. Any power you have comes to you from far beyond. Everything is fixed, and you can't change it." And that's what I think I would say to the political elites. You know, they're just puppets. I just think they're puppets. And I don't really, you know, I don't know. I think that talking to any one of them, it's just, you gotta hit them where it counts. It's like, did you hear about those protesters that caught that CEO by surprise, and they gave him some real heat, and he was just like, you know, going like, "Oh no," he didn't know what to do. They were, I don't know what he was a CEO of or what they were protesting, but they caught this guy, and he was like, oh, you know, and that's a lot more effective, I think, than you know, that's like going to the source. You go to the source, and I think that's just identifying what it is. How do these people get their power? Well, they get it through money. Where do they get their money? Well, I guess I go and buy gas, and then it ends up some of that money goes into the Koch brothers' pocket. It makes me want to ride my bike around. Something, you know what I mean? Makes me want to get on a bike and say fuck it, and use my car as little as possible, or get an electric car, or get out from under them. Shit, I don't know. I don't like to frustrate myself, and it just seems like some of the things they're going on, some of the resistance is futile, and other stuff is not. And you got to keep your eyes open. I mean, I'd say that, you know, I don't really trust a lot of people now. I mean, when I interviewed all these lawyers in the past couple of months, and they're all such liars. I could just see right through them. I could size them up in a minute with what they had to say to me. Even that last one I was telling you about a little while ago. He just, you know, he's got his mind made up about how he wanted to do things, and I've heard enough stories from other people that I know what's going on. The only chance I have is to represent myself. The only chance people have is to represent themselves and get together with enough like-minded people and talk.
Well, that goes back to what I was saying about the nature of labor understanding its own value, Dave.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Individually, everybody is going to say, "I can't afford to withhold my labor. They'll take my house." But if a million people say, "You know what? We're withholding our labor together," then you can build the community you need to take care of each other through the struggle. I mean, if the Republicans clearly wanted to shut this government down, Dave.
Absolutely.
And they should, and they should be given their fondest dream. They don't like government. They don't want government to work. And if the people who make the government work, and by that I do not mean members of Congress or either the House or the Senate, or even members of the executive branch, if everybody who's not going to get paid said, fine, I don't get paid, I don't work. You know, you can't eat patriotism. And 800,000 people said, screw it, and set up a picket line in Washington, D.C., cool. Then bring in the Capitol Police. Oh, I'm sorry, they're not getting paid either. Let them stand on the picket lines, too. The Republicans want this? By God, let them have it. Let them have their fondest dreams, because that's the bottom line, Dave. They're children. They are spoiled, rotten 3-year-olds sitting in the middle of a milk-stained floor screaming because they're the ones who spilled the milk.
Yep. I guess people just have to get outraged. I don't think that things are going to change until the outrage gets to a high enough level. But I think that we have to look at different ways of going at.
You know, I was having a conversation with Dr. Bill earlier, Dave, and he said, you know, what do you think the outcome would be if we had a national referendum on the Congress? Well, the outcome, I think, would be abundantly clear. Whether right or left wing, I think most of the, or centrist even, most of this country would say, throw them out. Have done. Shut the whole thing down. I just got a note in from Robert in Australia. Titled Double Dissolution. He said the Australian Constitution has a clause in it that allows both houses of federal parliament to be dissolved and a general election held if there is a deadlock between the Senate and the House of Representatives. We had two double dissolutions back in the mid-1970s when the Senate refused to pass the supply bill which funds the government. Basically, you know, the same sort of process that we're in now.
Right, we've got now, yeah.
Yeah, the people get an opportunity to vote, and hopefully when parliament sits again, the deadlock is resolved. During the election period, the various government departments all continue to function. Maybe, says Robert, the U.S. needs to consider a more parliamentary style of government. And you know what? I'd be behind that in a heartbeat. Except for the fact that it would require calling a constitutional convention, which would be brought to you by the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
And we would wind up with that, well, basically the same teabagging behemoth that these fools already want to build out of the ashes of what they're trying to do to our government. Robert also says, on a lighter note, some years ago, New Zealand didn't have a government for a number of months, and no one noticed. Everything just carried on as normal.
You know, I had a roommate who was from New Zealand, and this was like 20 years ago, and it's funny, he was like, he was a photographer for Hot Rod magazine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because he was always trying to make these dates with these models, and they would always stand him up, and he'd always be just fuming and so mad, and he was a pretty vulgar guy. I think New Zealand may be the Mississippi of the British Empire or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, that's not going to play well with the New Zealand listeners.
Sorry about that. They're very conservative down there, though. I do know that. Sorry, that just one person. I can't make a judgment call on that. But he was definitely a ruddy fellow. He would always be getting in like these road rage things with people on the road and come home swearing and cussing and.
Yeah, in light of what happened in New York today, let's not talk about road rage. Jesus, what a story!
What happened?
Oh, the driver accidentally bumped a motorcycle gang member, knocked the bike down, that kind of thing. And
yeah,
so
yeah, I know Chuck.
Yeah, and then the one motorcycle gang member came over and like bashed the window in. The driver had their child in the car. Okay. And so the driver tried to get away and ran over two or three more motorcycle gang members in the process. And you know, last I heard, you know, there had at least been charges filed against the attacker. Ugh.
That kind of stuff happens all the time in Los Angeles. What are you telling me? I mean, it sounds bad, but I mean, but they focus on these stories, and these kind of things happen all the time. It's like they'll focus on some story about some teacher who seduced her young that stuff happens like on a daily basis. Are you kidding? All around the country and all around the world, really. I mean, it's like oh yeah, that's tough stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm just jaded by having grown up in a big city like Los Angeles. But
you know, here in the hills and hollers, Dave, we just worry about things like meth and pills and.
Yeah, just like down in Kaiser and south near Salem, near the state capital, they've got sort of a crank infested area, meth infested area.
And yeah, it's nothing to joke about. It's very serious and very sad.
Yeah, it is. It's just a side effect of people having nothing to do and people.
And no hope and no future. Exactly. Hey, Dave, I got to roll because I want to get a couple more calls in, but it's good to hear from you.
Okay.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
See ya. Bye. Dave calling from Portland. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. Welcome to the President Buchanan's administration.
Oh, President Buchanan, how are you this evening, sir? America's only bachelor president.
Yes. I wonder about him. I've often wondered about him, whether he would have... people would have been unhappy with him, possibly. And people today would call him names.
Well, remember, King County, Washington... until they passed a referendum saying, oh, yes, it also stands for Martin Luther King. King County, Washington, where Seattle is, was originally named for the man with whom Buchanan slept during his entire Senate career.
Oh.
His nickname was Nancy.
Oh, okay. Well, I've often wondered because you know how it is in politics today if you don't have... at least one wife. You weren't even allowed an ex-wife for a while. I wonder if President Reagan was the first divorced president.
I don't know.
I don't know either. You know, I don't know everything, contrary to what I might try to tell you. I'm just utterly disgusted with this whole crap load. Do you see the thing I sent you earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice, huh?
No kidding.
Yeah. I'm just finishing a pretty good study of the of Sherman's campaign against Atlanta, just to refresh my memory in certain areas. But, what the hell is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen here with this? Do you think that the Big D party just uses this and then... that way they surrender nicely, and the other guys, the Koch brothers, get what they want, and everybody's happy except us.
Well, the only possible outcome, if the Democrats get their way, is that we get a continuing resolution that doesn't have any reference to Obamacare or you know, conference committees or any of that foolishness, and we just have a continuing resolution, and we continue to trundle along, stumbling and bumbling and rumbling. In the new normal of austerity politics and the sequester. Sandra was absolutely correct.
Yeah, that's probably right. She was probably right. I hate to say it, but she was right. And not because of her, but because of what it means to the rest of us. They say what bothers me, I'm depressed enough being my age, and I just found out the other day when I straightened my closet that some cleaning crew they got in here stole every piece of fishing tackle I had, which I love them for, because I can't remember what to buy anymore. You know,
I haven't
needed it, but it's still. Yeah, they brought these guys into this crew, and they helped themselves to whatever they could get to. They were another bunch between them and the one, because I don't think this female health aide would steal individual pieces of fishing tackle. She would have grabbed the whole bag, you know, the whole tackle box.
Right.
You know. But these other guys were—they went in the closets, and I should have told them, "Get the hell out of my!" If I ever get them in here again, I'll tell you what—you're gonna. If somebody sends you a clipping about this guy with bad eyesight blows one guy to Kingdom Come with a .38, don't be surprised if it was me. You never know, because I just have a bad attitude myself. The social service system—I was part of it when I was a young kid, and. Because of parental arguments, and they wanted me to go to a major work school, you know, for kids with IQ that was about way above average. Well, I think I punched in at about 130, 135 in there when I was in the second or third grade, and they wanted me to go to these major work classes, and I went over and observed these kids. I never saw a sadder looking bunch of people in my life. I said, I don't want to be part of this. These kids looked like somebody stole the apple out of their lunch. You know, it was like being forced on them.
Yeah.
And I think you learn without. I learned more sitting in the public library reading than I ever was taught in school. I had a history teacher call me an occupational hazard one time. Yeah, maybe because I tried to make the guy think a little bit. He was a high school teacher. Yeah, well, if he was a high school teacher, then call me professor. This guy wasn't too good. But the whole thing, this really hits me hard. This is like 1860 to me, watching this crap.
Well, it is. It's not because of you, Bill. It's because it is.
Yeah.
I guess I'm like a broken record in that regard. But people need to understand that this is not normal.
No, it is.
If it was normal, you wouldn't have Republicans out there saying, "Oh, this happens all the time. This ain't nothing to worry about."
Bull. I don't know what Truman would have done at this point, but
I think Truman would have taken to the rails at the time, and he would have done what he did. He would have gone around and called Congress nasty names until he got something out of them. Remember, he was the one who coined the term do-nothing Congress.
Congress, yep. He came up with that. I can remember one of the left-wing talk show hosts has some great radio commercials of Ronald Reagan pushing for the Democrats. I love it when you hear his voice and he's telling you how good the Democrats were. One of my friends I was talking to today said, these guys make Reagan look semi-liberal with, you know, because who is it? He and the Speaker of the House used to sit down and argue, and Tip O'Neill, but they'd come up with something that was, you know, and it didn't come down to this before they actually sat down and came up with stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just so sick of these people that vote for these idiotic, these are the goddamnest, either they're damn stupid or they think we're damn stupid. I don't know which it is, Gohmert and the rest of them.
Oh, no, they're convinced of their own brilliance, Bill. Just ask them, they'll tell you.
Yeah, right. I love it because I can corner some of these guys. I used to corner some of them in barroom discussions of American history, and they'd say something, they'd look at you like, what the hell's he talking about? And it was something that people knew, for God's sake. I was lucky in a lot of ways. Remember, my mother let me stay home from a little late to go back to grade school when I heard MacArthur's speech to Congress, the old soldier's speech.
You know? Oh, dear.
Old golfers never die, Bob. What do they do?
Yeah, they just can't find their balls.
You got it. That's about right. But I've reached a point where the guy I'm having breakfast tomorrow is a good friend. He's coming from Lake County to go to breakfast or lunch, and his father was in the engine room of a German submarine as a lieutenant, and moved here. And his son was born in the old country. Good drummer, his kid asked. Good singer. But it's just the idea that what happened with Kennedy. I don't buy the Kennedy assassination either. There's something that stinks there with the whole story. I mean, these stories they concoct, I'm not going to blame LBJ for it, but you begin to wonder. Of course, I've also often said that if I had an enemies, people who hated me as much as the list, the size that hated Kennedy, I would have left town, you know, and not come around, because that was the potential. I don't know how you feel about it, but the potential for people who...
Well, by November 1963, the list of people who hated John Kennedy, the list of people who loved him was...
extremely large.
But it was shorter than the list of people who hated him.
Well, I don't know. I sometimes feel that that's how Johnson had the big victory he had, was because of Kennedy.
At least in the South.
Yeah, down south, yeah.
I mean, the Cuban emigres hated him.
Yeah.
Most of the South hated him.
Yeah, because of the school integration, yeah. Yeah, keep going. You can keep coming up with stuff. I wasn't.
And you know, the CIA despised him.
Yeah.
the crazy ass generals had turned on him because he wasn't, you know, they saw everything as an opportunity to really, really make the balloon go up.
Well, I'll tell you, that 2 minutes past midnight, that book, I'd recommend it to anybody because I lived through the damn thing. I was, what, 18, 17, 19, whatever, yeah. Yeah, I was 20 when Kennedy was assassinated. Because we didn't vote in those days. You had to be 21, you know.
Right.
Now they should give an IQ test. And if you couldn't measure up to 50, get out of here. Or hand them that straight Republican ticket over there. You remember those days? Yeah. When you could mark one thing, what was it, a rooster or something, and it was a straight, you voted a straight ticket by marking on one side of the
ballot. Yeah, it was a rooster in Alabama, that's for sure.
Okay. But I've just got a point where I haven't been this depressed in a long time, because, and there's things that I can't do a thing about. I'm even too goddamn old to man the ramparts anymore. It just bothers me that I have to sit and listen. I mean, I talk to these people.
Yeah, but remember, Bill, you say you're too old to man the ramparts, but nobody is too old to work toward effecting meaningful change.
Well, you
there was a time I heard a story from the guy was a young man when he was in the civil rights struggle down south, but he said we looked at the old folks, we young people who were out in the streets, we looked at the young folks and said, well, what are y'all doing for the struggle? And they looked at us and said, who do you think's making sure you got clothes on your back?
Yeah.
Who do you think's making sure that you've got food to eat? Who do you think goes your bail when you get arrested for sitting down at a lunch counter?
And do I remember those lunch counter deals? Of course, with my sick sense of humor, I said, it's a hell of a thing to have to go to jail to be able to eat the slop at Woolworths, you know. It wasn't exactly gourmet cooking, but
right. This was not a food driven complaint.
It was not driven by that. No, But see, that
it was not a debate over cuisine.
Bob, the whole thing with me being a kid from a city the size of Cleveland, and going downtown, me and my buddies, we could walk downtown in 10 minutes from the projects that I lived in were opened under FDR, and they were like 20 years old when I first moved there. That's what. Our buddy that comes on after you, we've talked a few times.
Yeah, Rick.
Now, he was a musician, too, so we had that in common.
Is he a drummer or a bass player? Or?
I think so. I'm trying to remember, because he knew me. As soon as he got my email with a name on it, he said, man, I saw that name many times in the entertainment paper. Well, look in the police blotter. You might have seen it there, too. But Rick and I enjoy his work. He's a... What he speaks about is what Ed Schultz would like you to believe he believes in.
Yeah, see, I'll just say this. Maybe people will get mad. That's okay. Ed Schultz is not fit to carry Rick's sweat socks.
You got it, because
Rick is about a million miles better than Ed, and he has done a hell of a lot more in the way of living the life, walking the walk, and talking the talk.
Well, one of our family members clued me that Schultz had a right-wing show at one time.
Oh, at one time, he spent 20 years trying to be Fargo, North Dakota's answer to Rush Limbaugh. See, if all I hear is his voice and I can't tell content, I can't tell Ed Schultz from Rush Limbaugh. The voices are almost identical.
Yeah, there's a certain tonality, yeah, you're right. I feel bad because my grandkids are in their 20s now, and I worry about what they're going to do. And yeah, I just wouldn't listen. They wanted me to go to college, and I qualified, but hell, I just wanted to get a job and get the hell out of the projects and, you know, just be like everybody else. And then I fell into the trap of, like my buddies and I talk about the trap of music. When you start playing and you start liking it, it's like a disease. You can't get rid of it.
Right. You live with the sting.
And the time travels fast in life. But what the hell would you do if you were in Mr. President Not Sure's shoes? Would you fight him?
Damn straight. But then again, if I was in President Not Sure's shoe,
choose, the Affordable Care Act would have basically been Medicare for all. And, you know, that's because I'm a wild-eyed left-wing. You get the idea.
Well, he lost me when he calls in the same criminals from the health care companies. I wouldn't say anything to them and say, except, well, what are you guys going to do for a living? And I try to tell people when they start praising the health care companies, I said, are you talking about the same people? I said, I remember you when you got your car totaled by some guy and you hated the auto insurance company. I said, they're the same damn mentality. The same thing. The percentage of profit is more important than what they tell you they're doing for you. They aren't doing nothing for you. I mean, I've had it with health care. I had to pay the when my second wife and I split up. Well, it's a shame, you know, knowing how what my temper was when I was younger. Health care might have been a necessary thing in that household. Not for me either, because my temper used to be bad. And it still is bad, and it's frustrating because you can't do what you'd like to do. And Bob, you're a Southern man, you know, and a lot of the listeners are Southern men, and I can't do anything but respect the courage of the Southern private and non-commissioned. But my God, what, 6 million Americans died. Again, my one buddy that sent me the thing that I forwarded to you, he was a teacher for many years.
And see, I get that, Bill, because it still means something for me to walk around. Well, I've never been to Antietam, but to walk around to Shiloh, yeah, or a Gettysburg.
Well, I've never been to Shiloh. I never been west of the mountains, as far as the Civil War.
But it's that's the curse of having an intimate relationship with history.
Yeah.
You know, what happened 150 years ago is not something that is beyond relevance because it didn't happen on television or the photographs weren't in color.
Bob, times change and clothing styles change, but the mindset and the attitudes with some people never change.
Well, it is well that we would remember what happened 150 years ago because, again, Bill, I go back to my thesis that this country is as bad or worse divided now than at any time since then. And, you know, I include the civil rights era. I include the divide over whether or not to persist in the folly of Vietnam.
Yep. Well, I say the last war that I supported us in any way was under the UN flag in Korea because it was an open, naked invasion by a guy with 150 T-34 tanks and Soviet training, a guy who had come into North Korea along with the Soviet army, Kim Il-sung. He was not that the other guy was any much better. The old guy down in South, what was his name? Syngman Rhee.
Yeah.
He was a schmuck. I mean,
Well, but that all falls under the broad general heading of he may be a bastard, but he's our bastard.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, you got a note in from Jan and Jerry in Nevada. They said, tell Bill, that's why we all tune into the horn, for the camaraderie and the therapy.
Well,
I get that too. That, you know, the whole commune benefits from the family commune benefits from just the interchange of ideas. At least I hope.
Well, that's what it's about. It's not why people wonder why I use history as much as I do, because this ain't the first time this crap happened. This is whether it's in our nation or in others. For instance, if you go look at the Treaty of Versailles and what it did to German money and the people. I mean, the Kaiser, how much did the Kaiser get off of his money, you know? Oh, yeah, he quit the job, but nobody went after him either. And
he didn't go on a beans and rice diet either.
No.
By the way, regarding JFK, you got a note in from Jim. He says, nothing appears what it is purported to be. Take my word for this statement.
Yes, sir. Well, there's been so much talk. I mean, I hate to get into, you know, that kind of, there's a late night talk show that covers the whole country.
Oh, yeah, George Norrie.
What? Somebody, what? I just fell asleep here. What? Okay. Yeah, that guy. And the guy before him, harumph. Harumph.
Yeah, I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Hey, Bill, we're up against it. I got to roll, but it's awful good to hear from you. All right, bye now. 4 minutes before the hour, always nice to talk to Mr. Stress, our buddy Bill from Cleveland. And so we find ourselves at this point $65 short of matching Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Hopefully that will happen in the next few minutes or at least before airtime tomorrow. Because, well, that's how we stay out of the problems we got ourselves into in September. And now we just have to take care of the day-to-day stuff. A little program note, by the way. There will be no live program on Friday. Ferg and I are going to be on the road. And consequently, we have a mountaintop removal related meeting to attend. So no program on Friday. No Friday on the front porch, and my apologies for that. Maybe we'll try to turn Thursday into Thursday on the front porch. I'll see how Sparky feels about that. Thanks, everybody, for all you do to keep all of this going. I try to put the thanks out there every night because you are the only reason this operation continues to exist. Your ideas as well as your kind contributions are what keep it going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AACT.org. Go to AACT.org and learn about the healthcare crisis going on in Appalachia and learn what you can do to bring it to an end. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.